Lady and gentlemen, welcome to the 10th and only 10th episode of Tavern Tussle. What makes an adventure interesting?
What helps bring the adventure to life?
What makes the players feel that the world they exist in is alive?
And what makes your tavern stand out? Find out today on Tavern Tussle.
Hey guys, welcome back to Tavern Tussle. We mixed up the intro a little bit. Hope you enjoyed that. We'll you know, change things around. Keep you guessing. But as always, I'm Cam Bams, and I am joined by
Karateka.
We're Christian.
Yeah, it's out there.
We're just gonna end it all. And we are also joined by the lovely, luminous Aaliyah.
Once more, it's Aaliyah.
Yeah, well, that's fine. We're only engaged. It's cool. So yeah, so we would talk about our game of the week this week, but someone has this new one-year-old, so it was like his first Father's Day and all that stuff, so that didn't happen.
And I'm still alive.
Yeah, so hey,
so
silver linings, I guess.
Here to record another episode
of Tavern Tussle. So you ask yourself these questions all the time. You're like, I'm DMing a game, right? Are my players enjoying it? Is it interesting? Is it cut and dry and, you know, white as white out? Is it devoid of all color? Is it a silent movie? Well, we're here to help you out. We are here to help you out. I almost said heal.
I heard healer there.
Healer. We are healer to help you out.
We are here to heal your campaign setting.
There you go. So start off with the basic. The very basic cornerstone. Where does every D&D campaign start? Wow, guys.
In my experience...
Crickets.
I was about to say...
It's always been in a tavern. In every game that I've heard of, you
like
always
a lot,
start
that,
in a tavern.
That is a lot of people's go-to, starting in a tavern. But...
See, but it's
I don't
want to
say...
You know, it always starts in a town. Guys.
In a town,
it's
yeah.
Town. You can check the notes.
Town.
It's town. That's what I was getting at.
Thank I don't you. Have a computer screen.
So, you always start in a town of some sort. And I'm not trying to say 100% of games are like this. But, usually, you start in a town. And this town is usually bland. It's usually like a launching pad for some other grand adventure. But it doesn't have to be that way. Not anymore. You can create random encounters table. Because my favorite thing to do with cities and towns is make them living, breathing things. Because things happen there. You know, the townspeople have festivals. You know, the harvest comes in farming communities. You know, new mayors are elected. That kind of thing. Like, things shake up in every town across Faerun or Ravenloft or wherever you are. So putting those little things in all these little towns your party spends time in is not a bad idea. So just let random events happen in your towns and cities. I mean, of course, something's not going to happen every day. There's going to be boring, you know, Wednesdays where nothing goes on. It's just business as usual. But there's multiple things that could happen. Like, Aaliyah, Christian, Karateka, do you have any...
I mean, there's lots of things that could happen. And it, like you said, it doesn't have to be every day. But say you left on an adventure, you know, for a week or 2 weeks and you came back. Maybe the town was raided by bandits or maybe a political figure was assassinated. I mean, there's lots of things that can happen. And when I feel like when players leave and come back and something's different, that is a hook in itself. And it's not like, oh, you know, if I leave this town and come back, it's going to be the same shit no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, you can also make it supernatural things. You know, let's say Aaliyah, your little halfling wizard, Cora, she's in a town. She leaves for a week on an adventure with the dashing, handsome, rogue, Egon Crow, Kieran Tornico.
Oh, Lord.
And you come back to this town. Let's say you go back to Arborvale. you know, our DM Andy's favorite little peace town. What happens if you go back and every building is in cinders?
Well, I mean, I think it kind of hints to what we suspect while we were there. Because when we say that it was a peaceful little town, I mean, there was nothing going on. It was perfect suburbia. So to come back and find the place in flames, well, it kind of confirms the fact that, hey, like something was going on or something happened. And it's more a matter of finding out exactly what. Because it shakes to the core the belief that everything was perfect and fine.
But we went there the first time. There was nothing to do. It was just a pass-through point. Let's say we go back again and all of a sudden all the livestock are dead.
Well, then that's an adventure in of itself to find out what's happening and what happened to the livestock.
And let's just say, for query's sake, let's just say that one guard is full-blooded orc. Is that interesting?
I mean,
are you a racist?
I'm like, I don't know if there's any validity to your question because we're traveling with a half-orc, no?
Okay, fair point. I was just trying to spice things up there.
But no, I think what you guys are hinting at is like supernatural things, like big moments. It doesn't even have to be something super large. It can be something as simple as like a new shop opening up in town, a new magic store, a new general store. What do they have to offer? It's like the little things that you can find most fascinating.
My favorite little story hook is where something weird happens and no one in the town says anything about it. Like, let's say like every day at 3 p.m. a guy gets on the roof of the tavern stark naked, plays a song, pours out a goblet of blood onto the ground, and then just goes back in the tavern and no one says a word about it.
Well, that would be interesting, to say the least, because you'd have to imagine the people that aren't saying anything, it's because they're used to it. So then anybody new coming in would think instantly, like, how long has this been going on? Why is it still allowed? What is the purpose? Why hasn't anything been done about it? And it just opens up a whole boatload of questions.
But it's living and breathing. I mean,
yeah.
Am I right or am I right? See, and then what is the most important building in a town to a party of adventurers?
That's a hard one.
Tavern.
Because we go...
Thank you, the Christian. It's the tavern. It's in the name, babe. It's in the name.
I went straight to magic shops. Sue me.
Yeah, because you're a little wizard who... Whatever. Anyway, the most important building in a new town for adventurers is a tavern. You watch Critical Role, what's the first thing they do when they go to a new town? You guys are really great at answering questions today. Well, I'm even pointing at you.
I mean,
well, yeah, they go
depending
to the
on the
find...
character.
They went to Burden. They went to tavern.
They might try robbing somebody.
They went to the
dash.
They went to a tavern. You know? It's always a tavern. Always a tavern. Except for that one city where they were being attacked by gnolls. That was not a tavern.
They did go to a tavern.
Well, see, I even was wrong about proving my own point.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't look like a tavern at the time because it was being
attacked by gnolls.
Burnt to a crisp. But nonetheless.
It's still a tavern. But your tavern doesn't have to have a dwarven barkeep. It doesn't have to have a bard that plays good music in the corner. It doesn't have to even have wooden tables. Imagine a tavern where you all just sit on the ground on pillows.
That'd be interesting.
Right?
Because it's more about like the culture of the people that are there. Because that's the other thing is you can go really deep into how these people live their daily lives and what's considered normal for the town that they're in. So... hell, they could have this really dreary bar that they've just always had. Nothing really like super happy, no music playing kind of thing. Everybody's there just to drink versus having something, you know, that's more jovial, having the bard, having everybody get together and like just being happy, etc. There's a myriad of things you can do with your tavern.
And I think that any good city, especially, and towns can have two, is multiple taverns. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what kind of taverns could you put into your dreary little town to spice it up a bit?
I mean, I feel like that's super important because depending on the size of the town, say you have your like your older gentleman working class and they get off work and they just want to go to the local watering hole or whatever, grab a brew and not have anything super crazy happen. Like they just want to relax.
Like no... No tussles?
No tussles. I mean, I don't know. They're, unless they're like, you know, they could be like an ex-mercenary Which would be like another badass thing. Like you see like this 55, 60-year-old human male. He looks, you know, feeble. And then, you know, somebody tries to pick on him. And then he just whoops their ass.
Yeah, he hulks out.
Yeah.
Tears off his tunic cool. And he just ripped.
But yeah, no, you have like a calm, like collect place where, like she said, people just go to simply drink, unwind, whatever the case may be. Maybe grab dinner. And then you can have, you know, the more rowdy environment where, you know, travelers and adventurers, obviously, or if maybe like the guards, you know, military, they want to relieve the stress of whatever the day held, and they went to the tavern and, you know.
Or then you just have a tavern that's full tussle and has a fight club in the basement.
Yes,
and exactly. You can go to the other extreme where you have the one tavern that all of like people of higher authority go to, where they have, you know, their fancy drinks and they have just the fancy little finger food security at the door, and that brings its own enticement of people who want to get into that one.
Every drink because has what does an it umbrella. Offer?
It's got the gold flakes throughout. Yeah, yeah, things like that. There's so much you can do with it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's that'd be funny too, because if you're a rowdy group of adventurers and you're covered in blood and dirt, like, they won't let you into that tavern.
But you want to get in.
And that becomes, like, a thing, like, well, I want to go to there. So that becomes something different. And then if you're Andy, you can just throw a brothel in the middle of your city and weird everybody out.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought I would, you know, be so afraid of this 6'4" man coming on to me the way he did when Egon stepped into that brothel. That was interesting.
It was definitely not what any of us were expecting.
Yeah, no, it was. We're not going to go into details because we're a fucking family show. But Jesus, man. Oh, you got that. Okay, cool. Yeah, just the act of having multiple taverns in a town or a city just allows your players to pick the atmosphere that they're going to be the most comfortable.
And it also makes it more realistic because you don't go to any one town and have just one of everything unless you're kind of stuck in the little town that we are. Most cities that you go to are going to have multiples of places to eat, to drink, places to shop from. So you want to breathe that same life into your party. Granted, it's a lot for the DM to keep up with, but it's worth it, especially when the players sit there and engage with the things that you've created just to see them go through. It's just, yeah, I think, more satisfying for the DM.
The town we live in has 2 sit-down restaurants, but it has like 6 or 7 bars.
Yes.
So
there's the diversity.
That's one of those things. Like in real life, cities, small towns have multiple bars. So having multiple taverns in your small town is not a very big stretch, because it's one of those things that, like, people may not have a lot of money in the world, but everyone wants to get drunk at some point. So having multiple places to do that is good. And I mean, maybe you're playing a game of all paladins and clerics who don't drink. There's still little plot hooks you can seed into those taverns. You know, you could be that little gnome cleric who's just like, well, I do declare I must save the evil race of humans from this monster that is alcoholism. And then you just go to taverns and stand on your soapbox and you stop the bard. And you're like, sir, let me take this. The power of Cord compels you to give up this devil drink. That's my new character I'm going to make.
I hope not.
He's going to be a gnome cleric.
I told him he has to play it in your campaign, so I don't have to.
Oh, no.
It's going to be beautiful.
At least he nailed it, though.
Get back to my North Carolina roots.
Southern upbringing.
That's cool. So, okay, you have all these taverns in your town. You know, already your game is spicy. Already you're getting there and you're like, your player's like, holy shit, you took time to plan this out. You've had a random event happen in this city. Like, we rolled up, we looked for a tavern on the way there. All of a sudden, this naked dude just pouring goblets of blood off of the roof of this building, and no one's saying anything. What's the deal with that? That's strange. We're still going to get drunk, though. Boom. Instant adventure, and it's beautiful, and it shows that you took the time to care and process a living, breathing world.
And I'm just saying, you can capitalize on that whole Fight Club idea. That could be a real fucking thing.
Everyone now listening to this, in your next game, have a sheet of paper, like a legit sheet of paper, and just write Tavern Tussle Fight Club on it. and then have your players sign up for it, and then have them do a fight club in the basement of a tavern, and then tell us how it went.
I mean, there's got to be gambling, and there's got to be like a champion, and like
the champion is
big ass burly dude, like, and not just buff. Like, I'm talking like with the fucking keg belly.
No, this is what you do. It's a halfling monk.
Oh fuck!
It's like complete opposite. Halfling monk. Like, dude is just Fist of Fury, like Crouching Tiger,
Drunken Master.
That's even better.
Oh yes.
And his name is like Breitbart.
Bright.
Oh Lord.
We're not gonna get political, but you should beat the shit out of that halfling. Yeah. Okay, so your party's gone to the tavern. They've seen your little things. They've gone through the Tavern Tussle Fight Club. They're feeling like, wow, like a lot is going on around us. Oh shit, we need to buy stuff. How many people have one store for everything? You know what I'm saying?
Like, seriously, like, do you go to Walmart to buy a car?
Exactly my point.
No.
I mean, that wasn't exactly my point, but... Well, if you're under the age of 5, you can go to Walmart and buy a car. True. It's just plastic and runs on batteries.
But are you going to go to Stater Brothers to buy leather armor?
That is a grocery store for all of you in the UK.
Oh, shit.
I know you're listening.
My bad. You get my gist. Like, there, it is very rare. Even a general store is lit, like, usually not even... It's usually general items. It's not even like they carry everything. It's just a general store. Like, oh yeah, we have shovels and picks, and you know, maybe you can have basic leather armor if you're lucky. I doubt they sell weapons. Maybe I love a how
your
dagger. Voice
just keeps getting deeper and deeper as you're talking about this general store.
Like
you're just regressing into some shopkeeper. It's like, yeah, well, I got shovels and picks, and I got bags of wheat, and I got coil feed for your horses. Like, you're like the guy from Sling Blade.
Like, it just doesn't make sense that you will go to one store and you can, like, the same place you buy your club is the same exact place you're going to buy your potion of Frost Giant Strength. Like, I just don't see it happening like that.
Like, Aaliyah, what's your favorite store in game?
I already covered that. My favorite store is going to be the magic store, because that's where I go and get components. And
but what
that's
if you go into a town where there's not a magic store?
Well, that presents an interesting question for a wizard, is because you have to figure out where you're going to get any components you need if you want to find any magical items. Like, it would force me as a player into more of an interesting predicament to really think about where I'm going to go, what I'm going to get, and how to stretch the items that I have. Because if I can't get the components that I need, I can't use the spells that I have. So it puts you in a very realistic, like, hey, like, this is something you have to think about. Like, it adds more layers to everything.
And here's another hook. Let's say there is a magic store, right? I'm still talking to you.
Do they not like halflings in this magic store?
We're not all Andy. But let's say they have the components you're looking for, but they don't deal in money. You have to do something for them.
Deal in favors.
That's interesting. That's right? Actually really interesting.
That's another way to spice up the shops. You know?
Yeah, because we haven't come across that before. I don't think even in one of your campaigns, I don't believe that we've come across that. Because
I just thought of it.
No, yeah, that's interesting. Because yeah, it's if it's something important, especially for higher level or higher priced items, sometimes it's worth more than just the gold on your person. Or if they don't necessarily want to trade with you as a person, like as your race or whatever, if you come across something like that, like how do you deal with that if they're the only magic store in town, if they're the only place you can get these items from? Or let's say that there's some sort of recession going on in the campaign you're playing, so the items that were once very inexpensive are now incredibly costly. So at that point, how does your character deal with that? Do they shell out all the money, or do they try and steal it? Do they try and find these things on their own? There's very simple alterations that can be made just in the way that you purchase items that completely throws a wrench into the way you play the game.
Yeah, I don't think there's been a shop that we've gone to where Egon, Croaker, and Tornico has not stolen something.
I don't think so either.
I mean, so.
Now I have to think about whether or not that's true.
And another big thing is, even if they do deal in currency, maybe if you do a favor, they'll give you discounts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always like multiple things you can do with one idea.
I mean, yes. everyone who plays D&D is not down for the shopping trip where you hit up the outlet mall of all the different stores and stuff. But the fact that your town only has one store that sells everything is kind of blah. You know, like, have that alchemy shop where they get all their healing potions and antidotes and stuff like that. You know, have the general store where they only get general goods kind of thing. You know, and if it's, if you have magic in your campaign and it's a high magic setting, have that wizard who owns a stall. It doesn't have to be a whole magic shop. It could be a traveling wizard that goes town to town and then the party runs into him multiple times. Then it turns out he's the ultimate big bad evil guy that's going to destroy your party by following them on their grand adventure and selling them trinkets that don't work.
That got super intense super fast.
I'm just throwing ideas out there.
That's a good idea.
It's what I'm doing.
Now you can never run it though, because we're just going to know.
You're not wrong. And another thing, stop making the one dwarven blacksmith who knows how to do everything. You know?
He's always a dwarf.
He's always a dwarf. Like, have an elf blacksmith who makes weapons.
Those would be some really pretty weapons.
And then have the half-orc blacksmith who makes armor.
Yes. Or even flip it. Have the half-orc be making, like, the super intricate things. Because how interesting would that be to have an orc sitting there making, like, these really just delicate items?
God, you are racist against orcs.
No.
Have you seen Bright on Netflix? It's really good.
It's just the natural assumption that comes with it is, of course, what you went to right away was having the orc make the armor. Switch the brute, it instead. Yep.
Well, I mean, I was...
Uh-huh. Yeah. Backtrack now.
It's because I looked at Karataka, and he plays a half-orc. So...
That when it comes to weapons, they only make mauls and clubs.
Like, they have a great sword, but it's not sharpened. It's really just a slab of metal with a stick on the bottom. It's a negative one
great sword.
It's really a maul, but it's in the shape of a great sword. It's a great something.
It does bludgeoning damage.
Yeah. Well, I do declare, Mr. Half-Orc, that is not a great sword you have there. Cannot wait to do that. Yeah, so another way to spice up your campaign is just have these different kinds of shops in your town. Don't have that one shop they go to, just the quickie mart for everything. You know, split it up. And if it's a small town and only has one blacksmith, then I understand, but it's not a dwarf, okay? Stop it. It's not always a dwarf. Unless it is, whatever. And then another point is... the religion of the gods important in your town?
It definitely can be, just in the way that a lot of towns, you know, in our world can be. Some people are so heavily influenced by their religion that it guides every single thing that they do. So in the same fashion, a town in your campaign can be the same way. You can have people who just follow one religion and every aspect of any other one is violently, like, declined. Or you can have a town that really doesn't care. It just really depends on what you want to do, but there should be a good variation of things because you're going to go to different towns and everyone should have a different outlook on things.
This is the thing. Should you cater to the paladin in your party? Should there be multiple temples for all of the divines? Should there be only a couple? Or is your town only run, you know, by people that only worship Muradin?
I think it depends on how much you want to introduce religion in your campaign, because I don't think you should pander to any one of your characters. It should be more of a random encounter in the same way that you would roll for what monsters that your characters are coming across, where you decide ahead of time randomly what they might be fighting. Now, if you want to incorporate religion that much into your campaign, then yeah, sure, you can introduce a certain religion for your one character, but I think that takes away from the experience because it's not... Like, I get we're going between realism and fantasy and where does the line get drawn, but I personally feel like it should be random encounters with religion in general.
What do you think? Because, I mean, if I go to any kind of town, there's a Catholic church, there's a Baptist church, there's a Presbyterian church, there's a Mormon church, Jehovah's Witness church. You know, all these religions are always represented in big cities and stuff.
I mean, I think it just kind of, the way I would do it is, one, I feel like it'd depend on the size of the town. Mm-hmm. Like, if it's some tiny hole in the wall, like, the entire population of the entire town is 200 people. They have one tavern, one shop, which, I mean, in that case would make sense. Like, totally, you want to totally, everything depends on the size of the town. You're not going to, with a population of 200 people, you're not going to have 10 shops, 5 taverns, and 10 churches. Like,
it's just everyone opened a tavern at the exact same time, and they just never backed down.
They all take turns going to each other's practices. Yeah. It's a very loving community.
I feel like that adds another element, is when you do have to travel to another, like, there's major cities, there's smaller towns, there's, like, little settlements, like, trading posts or whatever the case may be. And then, like, yeah, in a large city with population 10,000, then, yeah, sure, maybe you can cater to more gods, more shrines, more churches. And then in smaller towns, you just kind of have to pick and choose.
That makes total sense, yeah, because I think it's unlikely to have multiple religions in, like, one really small town, just because if there's that one larger presence, most people are going to feel alienated, so they'll find somewhere else to go to practice their faith. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and then, so when you do put a temple or a church of something in your town, like, think about who you have manning it. Think about what they're capable of doing. If it's a super small town, like Karataka said, is there going to be a cleric there that can resurrect people? You know, like, are they going to be able to cure disease? Or are they just on a mission from a greater church to kind of serve this little community before they bump up to be able to do those types of things? You know, so, like, fill your legislature and churches with interesting people, you know, like, and have someone in charge of the town. Doesn't matter how small a town is, there's always a leader, a baron, a duke, you know, a king, a governor, a mayor, like, all these things. Because if they know who is in charge of the town, one, that's another outlet for them to quest for adventure. Like, oh, we noticed your town has this naked guy pouring blood off roofs. Do you want us to take care of it? And then you have him say, I don't know what you're talking about. And the plot thickens. Or, you know, you're like, oh, we did this service for your town. How about you pay up some money, you know? Or you go, well, I do say I've been to your tavern and I've been talking to the clientele about getting rid of that devil liquid you serve. I propose on Tuesdays we serve nothing but milk. You know, it's an interesting thing to throw in there.
For sure. And actually, I was just thinking, going back to, like, the religious, like, structure, you could even have, like, let's say there's a certain disease affecting a community that's primarily, like, one religion, and there's a separate religion that practices something that could help this community. So they come in to assist. At that point, you have the tension of people who agree with them coming in and those who don't, and it's infringing on our religious practices, and it's helping us out, etc. It's interesting. It goes back and forth. Yeah. Just an idea.
You see? We're full of ideas. All of us. All three of us. Isn't that right? Karataka.
Kind of feel like we should have been taking notes at this very moment.
Well, thankfully, you can listen to this on Twitch and Google Play and
not
iTunes.
Not Twitch at all, actually, but that's okay.
Just kidding.
She's new here.
We were talking about Twitch earlier.
And then another thing. I don't know how many times I've been in a game and the DM says, there are guards, with nothing after it. Just that pause, the dramatic of pause I just did, that's what he says. He pauses dramatically. There are guards.
And then you have to ask your DM a ton of questions.
You messed up the dramatic pause. Well, I do declare, if you do that again, we are kicking you out. No. But yeah, like, you have to put some kind of structure there. Mm-hmm. You know, are they militia? Are they fully armored? Are they random dudes in leather jerkins with billy clubs? You know, what kind of guard presence is there in this town? Is it, you know, guards sent from a king? You know, is it part of the kingdom as a whole, or is it just local farmers who volunteer in the off season, you know, to rabble up the razzle rousers?
Maybe they have rousers. like a sheriff, an elected sheriff, and he deputizes people. You know,
I just love a sheriff. He deputizes people. There's just something about the Wild West that gets me. I want to be deputized now and in game. Not in real life, God no. But, like, yeah, the party gets deputized by the sheriff to track down this naked man who pulls blood off the roof of the tavern every day at 3 p.m. the plot thickens. Yeah, so give structure to what seems to be authority in your town. You know, is the guard happy there? Like, are the people happy with the guard? Do they know them? Is it strictly business and they don't, you know, peruse the town or shop the shops or talk to the people?
That and, like, how new are they? Are they a pre-established thing? Have they been there for a while? Or is it a result of a new threat that they banded together men or women of all ages? Are they younger, like, in their prime? Are they older because they had to be thrown together in an emergency? I think that adds another layer to it as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's all these certain, like, little things you can think of. It takes 5 minutes to determine where the guards are coming from and why they're there. You know, it doesn't take very long to just put, they're all elves in this halfling village. Oh, well, that's strange. Boom. All of a sudden the party's a little, you know, turned on to this idea that, you know, why are all these elves guarding these halflings? And then you find out that the naked man pouring blood off the tavern is actually a revolutionary and the elves are holding the halflings hostage. Right? Right? And I just gave away the story. So there you go. But yeah, so you can take these little things and all of a sudden your campaign feels more lifelike. Your town feels more alive because there are things happening all the time, or not all the time, but there are things happening when times are low. Because there are games where parties sit in towns or cities not adventuring for extended periods of time and nothing happens. Like, if you throw in this one interesting thing, then, you know, like, all of a sudden you feel like you're part of something and not just rolling dice.
And it also introduces the idea that things are happening not directly as a result of your party. There are things outside of your group occurring in this world that makes it that much more alive.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point, because when the story only happens around the main characters, it gets kind of bland. But when the main characters aren't even there and stuff's happening, that's when it gets interesting. And then festivals. Throw festivals all the time. I don't care what it's for.
I think we've yet to participate in a festival, but I want to.
Just throw a festival. Just do it. But now we have this spicy little town we've created. You have the Tavern Tussle Fight Club. Their halflings being guarded by elves. They have 5 different taverns. An armorsmith and a weaponsmith. Boom. Alive, breathing, where random stuff is happening. It's cool. And then Wednesdays are boring. Nothing happens on Wednesdays. So now that you have this town, what do you do for adventure?
For adventure within the town?
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to, like, intrigue people in the town still, one of the ideas that I came across were, like, a haunted house. And that doesn't obviously necessarily always have to mean something. Like, maybe, you know, everyone knows about this haunted house, but everyone is too scared to go there. But, you know, you hear about it, and then the adventurers are intrigued. They go there. They find out it's just kids playing pranks.
Then, and they murder the kids. No, I'm just kidding.
That, only if you're Gilip. But maybe it's a band of cultists. And then maybe it's a ghost whose spirit just needs to be put to rest. And then the one thing I actually thought about recently was you can always change it. Like, say you threw out this information and it was never touched on. And so at first, say it was in the beginning of a game where you have low-level characters and it was going to be a very, like, minuscule encounter. Maybe it was just kids. Maybe it was a ghost. Whatever the case may be. But instead, the adventurers just disregarded it whatsoever. Well, then you can, as they grow, unbeknownst to them, something is happening in this house, and it grows to be something else. Like, maybe those cultists, maybe, like, cultists heard about this haunted house, so they go there, and they, like, think it's some, like, area of, like, thin, inner, planar existence, and maybe they think they can summon, like, demons or devils there, whatever the case may be. And then what once was nothing has now become something and is growing right next to or inside a town, and no one even pays attention to it.
I think that's super interesting when you take something that they disregarded and then turn it into something larger. Like, it shows also, like, your continued interest in different aspects of the campaign, that you're sitting there and planning things in the background too. And again, it's not always directly related to them. It's the little things that you miss that end up coming back to bite you later, because we did that, and Lord, is it going to bite us.
Yeah. I mean, someone's been reading Curse of Strahd. Yeah. You can tell. Yeah. That's you I was talking about. Yeah. No, but I mean, there's all these different things you can put in a town. Like, one big thing that Karataka came up with was secret societies.
Yes.
That is a huge thing that can be part of any size town.
Well, yeah, because you always have seedy underbellies.
Yeah, that's all. Well, Andy doesn't know that, but...
Hey, there was that one perfect town, and we're never going to forget it.
Yeah, that's true. It's a story. But... You know, secret societies are a big thing. Like, is your party going to become involved in overthrowing a corrupt mayor? Are they going to help the corrupt mayor for discounts at all the shops in the town square? You know, like, maybe a guy comes up to you right after you finish beating the halfling monk in the tavern tussle. You used your purse to buy everyone around. Guy comes up to you and is like, hey, I saw you fight that halfling monk who is unnamed. I got a job for you. Boom. Secret society introduction right there.
Anyway, it doesn't even always have to be bad. Like, you could have a society that's soul set on protecting the town. And unbeknownst to the townspeople, there's constant threats. Like, you have these people that are just protecting them. Batman.
You could be Batman.
You could be Batman.
That would be super cool,
though. I mean, who knows? Maybe that could totally be a thing. Maybe just like she said... What if a town goes about their jolly lives every day not knowing that a secret society, like, maybe a half a mile out, like a radius around the entire town, mm-hmm. like a half a mile out, they have, like, secret barriers, and there's, like, whatever, maybe, like, orcs, or maybe it's demons or whatever, like, there's, like, ooh, constant things trying to attack
that's
them.
That's a crazy good idea.
But the people in town don't even know what's happening. And there's a secret society that's just protecting them, have been protecting them.
Spice it up a little bit. Let's say that there was a race that was wiped out. And then they have a few that survived. And so those few that survived are trying to reestablish this race. And they have a few assigned people that are protecting this budding town. And go from there. If your party encounters that... And discovers, hey, we thought that all goblins were gone or all orcs were gone, and this is, they're starting to come back here.
See, and I've toyed around with the idea before about how humans are extinct.
Have you?
Remember my campaign where the humans were actually in an internment camp in the north, held by, like, this Nazi general guy?
Vaguely, yes.
Yeah, so what if this town has, like, the last known human in existence? And there's a secret society that, like, patrols around. And, like, we're talking, like, the devils are attacking. Demons from the abyss are attacking. Even the angels are attacking. Like, Morden Kanan once attacked because he wants to get rid of the final last human. But this secret society of a man dressed up like a bat and a little boy dressed up like a bird.
God.
Is keeping them at God. Bay. I'm telling you, it's perfect.
But then, like, that also begs the question, like, do the people inside of the town know what's happening, or are they just living their lives free and, like, not caring at all?
Because
then what happens when your party goes in
and they interact
about
the party
with them?
Like, the party is aware of it and the town has no idea what they're talking about. Like, they think the party's telling stories, and then you find out the mayor's daughter, who happens to be a very attractive tiefling, is actually the last human who has been magically disguised. Like, she gives birth and it's a human baby and everyone freaks the fuck out. We're writing campaigns here, ladies and gentlemen.
Like, now I want to play this.
I know, right? I want to be that guy dressed in that bat suit with my little sidekick. We just put Batman in D&D. What's up?
You can play around with the idea.
Not a sponsor.
Not a sponsor.
But no, I think secret societies are super interesting because you can make them as big or as small as you want to.
Yeah.
You can have like a one little like small secret society that's just really interested in like this one type of ale that comes into town. So they're constantly stealing it in the dead of night. Super small. Yeah, you can have that huge one that protects a town with the last human in it.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. Boom. That's a spicy meatball.
You're canceled.
I thought so. I've been trying real hard to get canceled, but here we still are. this week's episode of Tavern Tussle is brought to you by no one. But that's okay. We're still here. Karataka, do you have any last tips to spice up the towns in your campaign world?
I mean, you really just have to play around with the idea and just understand that things happen outside of the adventuring group. Every single person, I mean, you obviously don't have to plan every single peasant, freaking patron, whatever, life, but like things are going on in other people's lives and things are changing. People die, new people are born, new threats come, new old threats are killed or destroyed, whatever the case may be. Like things are always changing and make the world's world dynamic to where you just because the adventurers aren't directly involved, that give them things to find out that are new. Even if they've already been to a place once, twice, five, 20 times, give them something new to find out the next time they go there. I mean, there's so many, like you said, it doesn't have to be a big idea. It can be as small as a parade, you know, just random parade. Nothing comes of it. Just a random parade goes through town. You know, it's just an event they have once a year.
Boom. Yeah, it doesn't have to lead to some big adventure hook. It's just showing that even if you were there or not, this was going to happen kind of thing. Give the world legs.
Yeah, and I'd say, just don't be afraid to try new things. And don't be afraid to let old things resurface in the same way that Karataka was saying as far as, you know, that one haunted house that then turns into something much larger. And don't be afraid to throw detail in, because I guarantee the more detail you throw into your campaign, the more your characters are getting out of it, and in turn, the more they feed back to you. So you're just sitting there and creating that healthier and more interesting dynamic. So yeah, I think it's just a matter of just rolling up your sleeves, taking a ton of notes as far as what's coming out of your head, and just giving it a shot.
Yeah,
you're going to get feedback either way.
And when you put an adventure hook into your story and the party doesn't take it, you better make that payoff in the end. They're like, oh, this group of gnolls is planning on attacking the town. They have more than enough guards. It's fine. So they leave, go to the next town. Guess what? The gnolls brought trebuchets and mortars because they were led by this evil wizard. They go back to the town to talk to the sweet tavern girl they miss so very much. And she is gone.
She's on a pike. Outside of the gate.
Yeah. We're talking to the guy who just lobbed some guy his arm off.
Yeah, well,
you think that's rough?
I tried.
Her arm and one arm, one leg's eaten off.
Stop while you're ahead.
Yeah, but you have to, if you present something, and even if the players don't go with it, you will be rewarded so much from still having that payoff happen by your players' reactions.
Yeah, just seeing the look in their eyes. It.
Because, you know, the second they don't help someone and someone they actually liked, an NPC they got along with, gets hurt because of it, you will see their attitude change, you know? Like that bard that they see every couple towns that likes telling stories to them or whatever. Well, they didn't help this one town and he just happened to be there when it got destroyed, and so he's dead now. And they find his loot broken. In pieces. Da-da-da. Da-da-da. Da-da-da, da-da-da. That's copyrighted music, but it's okay. But yeah. Well, I guess that is it for us this week on Tavern Tussle. As always, you can find us on Twitter at
Tavern Tussle.
You can find us on Facebook at
Tavern Tussle.
You can email us at
taverntussle@gmail.com.
Oh, God. Taverntussle@gmail.com.
Is that right or not?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay. You sounded so disappointed.
Because you weren't facing the microphone. But it's okay. Okay, yeah. So that's it for me. Thank you very much for listening. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. And, of course, Karataka thanks you from the cold, dark recess where he used to have a heart, we think. And then Aaliyah thanks you from her beautiful eyes. She has beautiful eyes. Yes. But yeah. But thank you again. Please follow us on Twitter. Please rate us on iTunes. And we hope you have a wonderful week.